Blog Talk Radio.
Darkwee Show here on Blog Talk Radio, weaving together a mosaic of voices from the arts, pop culture, politics, and personal growth, and some unusual voices in the midst. Happy to have you aboard. It's our Monday Coffee Clash, our post-Oscar wrap-up show. So, yeah, we're going to review the bold, the beautiful, and the boring of last night's big Hollywood love fest. So if you want in and you're listening to us live Monday at noon, please have at me at 347-857-4505, and we'll certainly get your take on the big night. Right out of the gate, I got to ask you, Seth MacFarlane, do you think he's this generation's Billy Crystal, or is he headed for the Hollywood Oscar dustbin with the likes of Letterman, Chris Rock, and that fancy dance duo of Hathaway and Franco? What do you think? I'll tell you, I think, he's not quite Billy Crystal, but he had some of his same moves. Elegant-looking guy, very talented, kept it moving as best he could. I know there's some folks thought some of his zingers were a little tasteless. He did have that Chris Rock Rihanna joke that fell flat. And Ted, his alter ego teddy bear, looking smashing and dashing in a tuxedo, kind of get in touch with his inner Mel Gibson, a little anti-Semitic borderline there. So, mixed bag. The show went on way too long, as usual. In fact, it went on so long, I think they didn't give the director's credit to the right man. Steven Spielberg, I think, was really behind it. I'm breaking news here. So stick around. We're going to do it all. We'll get you in touch with your inner Joan Rivers, talking about the wardrobe malfunctions, upsets. Were there any? There were a couple. We'll talk about those and how one of my predictions came true. That's all coming up. Also, it's a Hollywood hangover, best cure, cinematic hair of the dog. We will get you some movie clips that the team from Two Tin Cans and the String Productions have been putting together, and some great music from the movies as well. It's all ahead right here on the Amy Beth Arkowitz Show. If you're listening live Monday, 347-857-4505 is your ticket to the show.
Hooray for Hollywood, that bully, wild, and woolly Hollywood. They hire cowboys and they hang their chaps up and doll their maps up and give them all that they lack. Now ain't it funny, then pay the money, shows what you can do if your horse can act. Hooray for Hollywood, they hire fellas whose physiques are good, and then they tell them they're the perfect shaped men to act like ape men, then they convince them they should. They make them grunt and yell and people think it's swell. Hooray for Hollywood.
Chock full of nudges at Henley Coffee, Henley Coffee.
I thought I was going to sneak away tonight. What a glorious night. Every face I see is a memory. It may not be a perfectly perfect memory. Sometimes we had our ups and downs. But we're all together. You're mine for a night. And I'm going to break precedent and tell you my one candle wish. That you would have a life as lucky as mine. Where you can wake up one morning and say, I don't want anything more. 65 years. don't they go by in a blink?
Welcome back to the Amy Beth Arkwe Show. We're celebrating the Oscars at their post-Oscar coffee clash wrap-up. So if you watched the show last night, upsets? Yeah, there was one, I guess. Christoph Waltz, first award given, I believe, for the Best Supporting Actor. Nobody thought he was going to win for Django Unchained. I think the favorite there was Tommy Lee Jones, who had won most of the awards throughout the season. And Seth MacFarlane even made a joke about it. The big goal was to try to make him smile, and guess what? They made him smile, but not with the award. Anyway, what were your surprises? 347-857-4505. And I think we have a caller. Hi there. Welcome to the show. Hello?
Oh, hi.
Welcome to the show.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. Do I recognize this voice?
Yes. It's your sister
Mama?
From New Jersey. Yes.
So did you watch?
I did. I even stayed up through the whole thing.
Oh,
stayed
man.
Up extra late. All for you,
uh-huh.
My friend.
It was long. It's always long. We say this every year, don't we?
Yes. Yes. It was long.
Yeah. What was your take on MacFarlane? Yay or nay?
I don't think he should be asked back. It had a few moments that were funny, but I don't know. He didn't seem to move it along too much, and there was a lot of shtick that could have been, I think, cut out.
Yeah.
Wasn't all his shtick. You know, I thought some of the big musical numbers were unnecessary. Although I know that the theme was celebrating the music of the movies, I get that, but it annoyed me that they cut off some people that were giving acceptance speeches. And,
mm-hmm.
you know,
but that ominous
have
music they used this year, right? They had that little weird kind of
the
Jaws
music
theme. To get rid of them.
Yeah, the Jaws theme. That was actually clever, I guess. But
it was funny, yeah.
Yeah,
the thing that I agree with you, some of the musical performances fell flat, like they were
mm-hmm.
hyping the Les Mis production, and I didn't think it was so hot. I wasn't crazy about the Chicago one either.
No.
So for all the hype attached to it, it really wasn't worth it. It didn't live up to those standards, I don't think.
I agree. I'm surprised they didn't do like a medley or a montage where they – maybe did different music through the decades rather than just resurrecting a few fairly recent musical movies.
Yeah, right. I'm kind of with you on that one. So kind of strange. I think he has a certain, I can see why they chose Seth MacFarlane, because he does kind of have a little bit of a Billy Crystal, a little edgier Billy Crystal talents. You know, he's got the song and dance
right.
thing down, and he's very funny. Some
he's
of his
charming.
Kind of felt, he's charming, yeah. He's handsome, he's charming. But some of them did fall flat. But, you know, that's always the way. And there were a
yeah.
couple that were questionable. The Chris Brown Rihanna remark, I think that was very questionable and tasteless.
Mm-hmm, I agree.
Ted kind of bordering on that anti-Semitic business was a bit much, although he's adorable
yeah.
in a tuxedo. So the big surprises, award-wise, as I mentioned, Christoph Waltz winning for Django
Unchained. That was a big surprise.
That was the upset of the evening. That was
mm-hmm.
the upset. The other one, which was not an upset and which I pretty much predicted both on this show and on Friday on PopNet, we did a little pre-Oscar roundtable, and I predicted there were these rumblings that because Ben Affleck was not nominated for Argo
mm-hmm.
as director,
Ang Lee.
The Academy might have an anti-Steven Spielberg backlash, and Ang Lee would pull it off, and he did, for Life of Pi.
Yeah.
Which I have to admit, a confession, I haven't seen it yet, so I can't
I haven't
speak to
either,
that film.
But I've heard a lot of people rave about it.
Yeah,
so.
it looked beautiful, and I think it won the most awards, because it won the directing award, it won best score, it won some of the visual effects awards, so it is the one to watch, and the cinematographer won. For obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm.
Lincoln, not as big a winner as I'm sure Spielberg and company would have liked, but Daniel Day-Lewis made history, becoming the first actor to win 3 Academy Awards in the leading actor role. He won, of course, for My Left Foot, mm-hmm. There Will Be Blood, and now for Lincoln, and he was the lock. I mean, if he lost, it would have been a real upset.
Yeah, he was a wonderful Lincoln, and he looked very handsome last night, I thought.
He was,
in that navy tuxedo. Yeah, the speech was very good, humble, and funny.
And well rehearsed. He knew he was going to win, I think. And he knew Meryl Streep was going to give it out, so he had that little Meryl Streep, I was going to play Thatcher, she was going to play Lincoln thing, which was very funny. And came at a good time because, you know, unfortunately, by the time you get to the biggest awards of the night that people are most interested in, mm-hmm. you're kind of set up with it already.
Yeah, I agree.
The show, you know, you're like, all right, already, I'm tired, but they have to hold out hope that we're going to get to the final end, and they made that big hoopla with Michelle Obama giving it out at the White House, and it was nice, but she had the whole big spiel. You know,
I kept thinking to myself, please, just hold your hands. She was flailing those hands a lot. you know, I was like, give him a break. But, you know, she looked lovely, and I've been reading some, you know, negative rumblings on the Internet about it, and I just think that's much ado about nothing. Somebody called it, like, very Orwellian, you know, that the Hollywood's too in bed with the high power of the government or whatever. I'm like, please.
Yeah.
Don't read more into it than it was, you know.
Right. I wonder if
I think.
I agree with you on that, but I didn't see that today. But I wonder if it wasn't a year when there were so many political movies, if they would have done it. In other words, like if there was a scenario that there were some rumblings about that Silver Linings Playbook might have won because it was becoming like a sentimental favorite, and there was a whole big campaign for it and so forth. I wonder if Argo hadn't won, which was a movie about a political event. And the other nominees were Lincoln, which was the big, you know, political movie, and Zero Dark Thirty, which some people are suggesting was swift-voted, if you believe that because there were people in Hollywood in Washington who were against the depiction of torture, and they didn't think it was accurate, that they undermined that movie. I don't know. I didn't see that movie, and there's a reason why I didn't see it, not because of whether it's accurate or not, but because the first 20 minutes is supposed to be watching sheer torture, and I don't think I could subject myself, at least in a movie theater, to that. I may watch the video or something. But, you know, I'm not sure if that's true or not, but I'm just wondering, this was such a political year for movies with political themes. I wonder if they would have done it. I mean, she didn't know who won, so, I mean, I'm not suggesting that. But I'm just wondering if they would have been inclined to do it if it wasn't such a year with the politics being so much in the forefront. I don't know.
Yeah, that's a good point. I don't know. I mean, but it was a surprise.
Yes, it was definitely a surprise. I just she was lovely and it was fine. I just thought because it was going on forever and then she had this little, you know, perfectly fine but nothing original spiel about the importance of movies and what a teacher
mm-hmm.
prepared and said that, and it's like, just get to it, because by then everybody was bleary-eyed and just wanted to get the award out.
Yeah.
The other big moment that I felt was fascinating and very real and shows how things are live and spontaneous was when Ben Affleck got up at the end and gave this spiel about working on his marriage. Did you hear that part?
Yeah.
Which was sort of like, I was like,
Yeah,
stop,
I wasn't sure
now.
If that was a good thing or what. Like, you
well,
know,
that's
I
what
didn't.
I mean. I was saying,
like, was it a slip?
Now.
I mean,
yeah, stop talking now. Stop while you're ahead. But very happy Argo won. I think it was an excellent movie, and sorry he didn't get nominated for Best Director, but these things happen.
Well, actually, when they first came up and the one producer pushed Ben Affleck out of the way, I was like, hey, what's that all about? So,
right.
You know, I thought that was a little strange, but then when he explained, when the producer, I forgot, which of course I don't know his name, which is not nice, but then he explained that the reason why he wanted to speak first was because he wanted to tout, you know, the talents of his great director, who was also a producer, you know, Ben Affleck. So then I was like, oh, that's why.
Yeah, right. And of course, McFarlane did make a funny comment about that, where they talked about at the beginning, Argo was such a, it was about this covert operation. It was so covert they didn't realize that Ben Affleck directed it.
Yeah, that was funny.
That was
funny. You know, and then he said, oh, yeah, they realized that they made a mistake or something, you know. So they definitely did mention that. The opening was very long. That whole Star Trek thing, and you know I'm a closet Trekkie, but that whole, you know, Captain Kirk coming back from the future to warn him. I mean, it was kind of a clever way to do it, but it went long, I thought.
It went too long. Yeah.
Went too long.
Well, I told you Steven Spielberg was directing it, and nobody, he didn't get a credit, but he was
right, that's good. It's not
too. What do you think about? Can we talk? Get in touch with your inner Joan Rivers. What do you think about the wardrobes?
Oh, you know I have things to say about the dresses. I mean,
that's why you're here.
Of course. Well, I thought there were some beautiful women wearing some beautiful dresses, and then there were some beautiful women who you think, do they own a mirror?
Yeah.
And you know they have stylists and people, like, offering to, you know, dress them, and I'm thinking, this is what you picked? Like, for instance, I think Anne Hathaway, in both the dresses she appeared in, looked horrendous.
Yeah.
She looked awful on stage in that, like, flesh-colored tiered thing that she wore. It looked ridiculous and too pale for her, especially in her, you know, like, chicken-like state that she's still in. You know, she still needs to put on some weight from this movie. And then she changed into a dress that, when she was sitting down, looked better, you know. But then when she stood up, it was like, I don't know. It was too shiny. It was too pointy. It had those weird darts. Looked like she needed a bra very badly.
Yeah.
And
well, they're already talking. Somebody called it Le Nipperabla or something.
Yeah. It looked horrible. It really looked like a poorly made prom dress rather than a Prada dress.
Wow.
You know.
Yeah.
It was very, and it was boring. It was this pale peachy pink or something. And she's very, you know, pale-skinned. I mean, she's a beautiful girl, but it just, I don't know, it did nothing for her. And Kristen Stewart, she looked like a disheveled, like, ripped-up mattress. I mean,
well,
that
Kristen
was a...
Stewart, I give her a little slack because she also found out yesterday that she won the Razzie for her performance in the Twilight Saga Part 2 or whatever it was.
All the more, you know, reason to, like, book your best. And show that you are, you know, you can put on that Hollywood glamour. She just looked like she needs a brush. And her dress.
The hair was crazy, yeah.
Yeah, the hair was like she just woke up. And her dress looked like an unmade bed. I mean, it was,
well,
you know.
Maybe she woke up next to Quentin Tarantino because he looked like he rolled out of bed.
Yeah,
too
He did, too.
His tie was all askew from the beginning. It's not like the night wore on and he got tired. And, you know.
Yeah, I just don't understand. I guess he's trying to be hip or something.
I don't think he does well in a tie because they showed him on a clip that he was presenting or making a speech about somebody who was honored at the governor's ball, and he also had his tie askew. And I remember him in past award shows, he would come on with just like an open shirt and not. I guess he doesn't like ties or he doesn't do well with ties.
I guess so, but you know, it's like one night.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know how any of the men don't do well. I mean, it's a tuxedo, for God's sakes. How many different variations can there be? I mean,
although
you can see some of them look horrible. They're ill-fitting, they're too short, whatever. I'm thinking, just look in a mirror. It doesn't look right. It doesn't look hip just because it's two sides too small.
And
you know, it seems to be like the new thing.
Yeah, but especially, as you said, most of these people, if not all these people, have stylists who help them and get them the clothes. So it seems, I don't know about the men, maybe not, but certainly the women do, you think somebody would be saying, hey, just make sure, you know, if I'm ever in this position.
Mm-hmm. I will.
Like
don't worry.
Yeah, no, I won't
worry.
Well,
maybe that's the problem. They think they have a stylist. Oh, they know, and, you know, they're pushing the envelope.
Yeah.
They want, you know, this is what's
they know. They
the
know
next
a way
thing.
To get they know the way to get you on the worst dress list.
Yeah, I think that's what it is. I don't know.
But you know who I thought looked lovely was Jennifer Lawrence, who won for Silver Linings Playbook, and I'm happy she did. I think she looked lovely. She did fall, and I felt bad for her, and she, of course, recovered nicely and made a very nice, humble speech. And people stood up, and she said, I know you're standing for me because I fell down. You feel
terrible. Yeah.
But I thought she looked lovely.
Yes.
Meryl Streep looked nice, I think.
Yes, Meryl Streep looked nice. I thought Sally Field and Jane Fonda both looked lovely. I'm not a big fan of yellow, but Jane Fonda, it was an unexpected color choice, and she looked very nice in it.
She worked it. And Barbara Streisand looked nice, I believe, when she did her Way We Were rendition, and she sang beautifully as well.
I'll disagree with you on that. I mean, I think Barbara Streisand sounded terrific. If you close your eyes, you would not, you know, you wouldn't think that she's been in the business that long. Her voice is just as strong and lovely as it was when she probably first recorded that song. I thought, you know, the hair is too long and straight for her age. I think she over-accessorized. She had like 16 rings on, including a ring that was like attached to a chain to a bracelet. I mean, it was just...
Really? Well, now
she had these multiple necklaces on. I mean, I don't know. I thought it was this very ungepuchte kind of, you know, overdone look.
I'll have to... now I have to... Because when I said it, I said, I forgot what she was wearing. So I have to go look at it now. The thing about the In Memoriam, I just want to mention, I guess they were in such a rush to get to her song, which is fine, but they left off a couple of people. A glaring one was Andy Griffith, who I know people know he mostly, younger generation-wise, for the iconic TV show, but he was a very prominent film actor for a long time and, in fact, was featured in one of the most prophetic films of all time, A Face in the Crowd, Elie Kazan's movie, which is sort of a precursor to some of these crazy Glenn Beck types that we have on the radio and stuff. To leave off a person who has had a very substantial film career in the In Memoriam tribute, I think, was a glaring omission. I heard somebody mention they also left off Alex Karras, who was best known as a football player, and then the dad on Webster, but he was also in a couple of movies like Blazing Saddles, etc. But Andy Griffith, for sure, really was a glaring omission because he was a major star. You know, I don't know how you leave somebody off like that. I know a couple of years ago, Farrah Fawcett died. Ryan O'Neill was very upset with the Academy because they didn't include her, and they claimed it wasn't an omission. They claimed that she was best known for TV performances, which may be true. But she also had some film, and she was in fact nominated for an Oscar.
Right in The Burning Bed, right?
Well, The Burning Bed was a TV movie, but she was nominated for an Oscar for her role in The Apostle. Later on in her career, and you know, so that was a few years ago, but that was a glaring omission too. So yeah, they really should be careful, especially with these big names. And I'm sure they leave off countless people that we've never heard of. They had a lot of people.
Right, behind the scene people.
They do have a lot of those, and they probably did leave off some of those as well that we don't know about. But you know, I think a lot of it, you know, it's funny what things they choose to, I don't know if they chose it or it just wasn't, you know, inadvertent, but what they do edit and what they don't, what they do allow in is kind of intriguing to me, if you know what I mean.
Yes.
So what about the speeches? Any speeches stand out as your, favorites or they kind of blurred together?
Yeah, pretty much. It's not like any particular, I mean, as we said, Daniel Day-Lewis was, I was surprised he was so funny because he's such a serious actor, comes across, you know, austere or whatever, but he was quite charming and humble. I don't know. No, it really wasn't, you know, anybody else completely standing out to me.
Were you disappointed?
Know.
Were you hoping for anybody to win that didn't win?
No, not really. You know, I think this year I kind of saw more of the movies than I usually do, for whatever reason. I tried to see a few more before the Oscars, you know, intentionally, but I couldn't get to them all. So I did know more of the things that they were talking about, where in the past sometimes I get bored because I'm thinking I can't even root for anybody because I don't know any of these things yet. I have little children, so if it's animated, I see it, but pretty much that's it.
you saw all of them, and I think you did call that the Brave would win, and it did, right?
Yes. For animated, I did manage to see all those. Brave was an excellent animated feature. And I did actually see the one that won the animated short, Paper Man.
Oh, really?
I saw it as it was before some movie I saw, an adult movie that I saw with a friend, and it was the only animated short that I saw, so of course I was rooting for that one.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, I was like, oh, it won, you know.
That's very unusual, but that's nice that they're doing that again. I think when I vaguely remember as a little kid, they would show cartoons, and, you know, they don't do that anymore, you know.
No, and I mean, it would be nice if they did get those short films out, you know. And even, you know, those documentaries, they looked very interesting. It's very hard, especially if you're not in a city, a big city, to get to see these important pieces of work.
Yeah, I know you're right. But with the advent of video, you do get to see them, more things that you would normally not get to see. And
that
also
is
HBO,
true.
HBO very often, and Sundance Channel and IFC, those kind of places, will very often, and sometimes PBS as well, will show these documentaries. But it's hit or miss, you're right. It is more. It's still more hit or miss. But the one great thing about DVDs now, and even before that for VHS, the idea that you can see films that come and go for whatever reason don't take off, or what they would call the art house films. I mean, the day before the Oscars, they had the Independent Spirit Awards, and I watched a little bit of it. I couldn't watch the whole thing because, you know, how much award shows can you take? But I'm reminded of so many independent movies that are fascinating and interesting that probably never even came around to most sort of local platforms that you might be able to see. And I made a list of some that looked very intriguing that I remember hearing about. The Starlet is one. The Return, about a Afghani or Iraqi war veteran, a woman who comes back and has trouble. It looked very interesting. So there are some interesting movies that and I'll have to get the list of all those that were involved. Bernie, I happen to see, which is actually based on a true story about this guy who was a funeral director who got involved with a wealthy widow and then wound up killing her. And it was Jack Black and Shirley MacLaine, if you can imagine.
Wow.
Worth seeing. It's fun. It's very fun.
Okay.
They do it in a funny way. So I already have seen that one. But there are a lot of these interesting movies that are out there that come and go. And
yeah.
They have another life, not only for viewership, but also for commerce. They can actually turn a profit on in video where they might bomb at the box office.
That is true. Mm-hmm.
Like the David Chase film, Not Fade Away, which I guess was a real clunker at the box office. I don't think they gave it much of a chance. But
yeah, it wasn't out very long. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. They're already promoting it on video, so it'll be on video soon. And that probably will have a life after the movies, so to speak. In fact, coming up on Friday at 1:00, our regular time, I'm going to be speaking with Laura Lee Echebelli. She's one of my former colleagues at the late lamented Schoolhouse Playwrights Workshop. She's a playwright, an actor, director. In fact, she was featured in one of my short plays at the Samuel French Festival some years back. She and her brother Tom have been trying for the last few years to get a film adaptation of the real life story of their grandmother.
How interesting.
Very interesting story back in the 1920s. It was a groundbreaking story in upstate New York. She actually accused her stepfather of sexual abuse, and he went on trial. It's called Chickadee. They have some big names behind it, I believe, but the question is funding. So we're going to talk a little bit about the whole independent film movement and how, on the grassroots level, what do you do? I know they've used Kickstarter. They've done different things. So she's going to talk about that. So, you know, we go from, you know, the Hollywood glitz and glamour, and everybody thinks it's so easy and so beautiful and glamorous, but there's a lot of hard work and grit that goes into getting these things made, especially at the indie level. So we're going to be talking about that, so that should be
fun. And that sounds very interesting.
Yeah, she's a very interesting and delightful person and a very generous artist, so we're going to see if we can help her out a little bit here as well. So that's coming up, and as I mentioned, the Razzies were also last the day before. The big winner there, Twilight, I think, cleaned up, the Twilight Saga Part 2. I don't know if you saw that. And Adam Sandler won again for this time for That's My Boy. Last year he cleaned up. He won both actor and actress for his dual role in Jack and Jill. So he may be the reigning king of the Razzies.
Maybe he needs to do a serious film.
You know, he's good in the serious film.
Well, he has done some serious roles, and he's a good actor. I think it's when he does too much slapstick. It's just,
He did a beautiful job in that movie Rain Over Me, which was about a man who lost his wife and children in 9/11 and how he was sort of coming apart at the seams. He and Don Cheadle were friends, and it's a beautiful movie, and I recommend it if you haven't seen it. It was one of those little under-the-radar deals that is often on cable or DVD now, so you can pick it up a few years ago. So, yeah, he is a good actor, absolutely. But you're right, his bread and butter, he makes a lot of these movies that are critically disdained, though, do make a lot of money. So that's his bread and butter, I guess. But
Really? I don't know. I don't even remember that one coming out. That's My Boy, is that what it was? I don't even remember what that one's about.
I don't know either.
I don't know. They do all start to blend together when they're that stupid.
That's right.
You know? I mean, and I like some silly, you know, silly humor. My boys certainly do, all three of them, including my husband. You know, so I have seen probably more of that than I would personally choose. And, you know, sometimes it is just funny and you just can't help but laugh. But it does sort of all blur together, you know. But, you know, I guess if that's what's making him money. But, you know, the people who have, like, a real long-lasting career seem to know how to balance. They do something that's more appealing to the mass market so that they can afford to do something a little more artistic. And I just think that that's probably, as an artist, a more rewarding way to do it, not just to do everything just for profit.
I would think so. Yeah, I think you're right. And he was also, he was Spanglish, which was a lighter movie, but he also had a nice turn in that because that was...
Oh, he was very good in that. It had a lot of heart.
Exactly. It was funny, but it had a real heart. He played, you know, a dad who, a husband and father who was struggling with his adolescent daughter and his wife. And was she a nanny or cook?
I think she was the housekeeper. I don't know.
Yeah, but it was an interesting, nice, you know, family-friendly, fun, heart, you know, feel-good film.
Yeah.
So he does have that light touch, but he also does have that little bit of a heart to him. So, yeah, I think I would rather see more of those. But I try to avoid the dumbest comedies because, to me, it's a one-note joke that I got it already. I don't have to see it for 2 hours.
Yeah.
It's hard to sit through that kind of stuff. But
that's just he was in another comedy with Drew Barrymore. Oh, I forgot the name of it now. Where she lost 50 her memory.
50 First Dates, yeah.
Yeah, that one. And that also, I mean, had a lot of, like, silly humor in it, but it had, the core of the story had a lot of heart to it, and it was about him developing this relationship with this woman, and, you know, so, you know, I like him better when he does a film. If it is a comedic role, I like it better when it's mixed with a real story that has heart, you know, because he does have that, nice, I don't know, he's that everyman, you know, he can do those roles, but, you know, the kind of pure stupidity ones I don't really go for.
Stay away from the pure stupidity. Okay, so now we've revamped Adam Sandler's career. If you want to have a conversation.
Because I'm sure he's listening. He's listening
to us. 05, we just lost the caller who was waiting on hold. We're going to get to you, I promise. 347-857-4505. It's our post-Oscar wrap-up extravaganza. I promise it won't run as long as the Oscars. But here's a trivia question. I'm going to throw it out there. Don't answer it yet in case somebody else calls in. But when think about the following names. Nick Nolte, Glenn Close, Alfred Hitchcock, Spike Lee, and Bette Midler. What do they all have in common? Think about that. Nick Nolte, Glenn Close, Spike Lee, Alfred Hitchcock, and Bette Midler. What do they all have in common? 347-857-4505. You think you know?
No.
Oh, okay. If you do know, don't say. But
I'm not going to say, but I don't think I know.
I don't think you know. Okay.
No, I don't think so.
Here she is, direct from the convent, Miss Dixie Leonard.
I was alone on a shelf in a world by myself. Oh, where could my Prince Charming be? But a man came along, made my life like a song, and taught me these words of ecstasy. Tenderly, I want some hug and some squeezing and some hugging and some teasing and some stuff like that, babe. I want some petting and some spooning and some happy honeymooning and some stuff like that, babe. I used to think that love was just a lot of rubbish, a mess of cabbage, a mess of cabbage. But now my attitude is holy lovey-dovey, and baby, you've done it. I want some kissing and some helping and some missing and some loving and some stuff like that there. I want some living and some working and some wasting and some pacing and some stuff like that there. And when I get a certain feeling, I confess it. There's really only one expression to express it. I want some hugging and some teasing and some mugging and some teasing and some leaping and some chasing and some weeping and some pacing and some stuff. I want some stuff like that there.
You remember that? Mama, you still there?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Okay.
I thought you wanted me off.
No, I just wanted to play the Bette Midler song. Do you remember that movie, For the Boys?
Yes, I do remember that. It was actually a good movie.
It was a very good movie, and Bette Midler was nominated for an Oscar. She'd also been nominated for an Oscar for The Rose. And I believe Stella. I don't know if she was nominated for an Oscar for Beaches. That I don't know. I mentioned nominated, but she didn't exactly win.
Oh.
She never won. Nick Nolte never won. Alfred Hitchcock never won. Spike Lee
really?
Never won. And actually, did Spike Lee win in the documentary? I think he won for the documentary. So I take that back. But he didn't win the director Oscar. He was nominated for the screenplay Oscar for Do the Right Thing, but not for director, I don't believe. I have to double check that on Spike Lee. And Glenn Close, I know, was never. She's been nominated several times, 6 times, but never won.
Wow. Oh, I would have never guessed that.
There are a lot of really heavy-duty, you know, Hollywood A-listers who have never won an Oscar. So
I guess
about,
it depends on who they're, you know, who's running against them. And,
yeah,
you know, there's
exactly.
So many politics, too, that do play into it, as we know.
Absolutely. No, that's the whole problem. I mean, that's very true. Well, that's why somebody like Paul Newman didn't win his Oscar until very late in his career when he won for The Color of Money, which was arguably not his best film. So that
mm-hmm.
was his lifetime achievement tribute, time to win now, you know. And they don't always win it for the one they should have won it for. Well, you know, it's politics. A lot of it is politics. But it is a real thrill, I'm sure, for those who do win. And especially, you know, when they've waited a long time to win it, there's something extra special to it, I suppose.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure it's very exciting.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
I'm sure it's just exciting to be there. Did you see that little girl? She was all dressed up. She was very excited.
Oh, yeah. That's right. The 9-year-old. I can't think of her name, but yes, the one from The Beast of the Southern Wild, another one
mm-hmm.
which is on my list that is supposed to be fantastic, and we'll have to check that out. So lots of great movies out there, and one of the great things about the shows, and I know we talked about this during the Grammy show, you're not thrilled with people congratulating themselves. I get it. And some of the shows can be, some of it can be tiring to watch, but the best thing about it is that it really does showcase the work and gives people impetus to go see this some really good, important work, and sometimes things that are more under the radar that deserve attention. They get the short shrift, things like Beast of the Southern Wild or Amour looks fantastic.
That looks very good.
Yeah.
I had a feeling it was going to win Best Foreign Film because I knew it wasn't going to win Best Picture. I figured it was like the consolation prize.
Exactly.
You know. But it does look very, very interesting and well-acted.
It really does. So those are things to put on the list for the DVDs, and, you know, I love movies. I'm not crazy about award shows either, but every year we get excited about it, like it's going to be a big event. We have to watch it just because we have to, right?
Yeah.
And then we get to rehash it and talk about it. So I thank you for staying up late to watch it. And
anytime.
Your insights, particularly your wardrobe insights. I know you're going straight to the Fashion Police with Joan Rivers after this. You'll be sitting
with
Joan.
Yeah, I wish.
I don't know. Do you wish? Do you want to get the ones over with Joan? I don't know.
No, you're probably right, especially since I'm sitting here in sweatpants. It probably would not go over well with her. The Grand Dame. I don't think she owns a pair of sweatpants.
Well, I don't know. Well, you never know. You'll have to check out her reality show, although we're not doing that anymore, so we're not watching reality shows. Right?
Yeah, especially that one.
We don't do reality shows. So, Mala Mama, thanks for dropping by. I appreciate it. We will talk to you another time, I'm sure, on another fun-filled edition of the Monday Coffee Clatch, okay?
Okay, sweetheart.
Thank you for joining me.
Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye.
I'll give you a proper send-off. See, I like to give you a proper send-off.
What?
Okay. 347-857-4505, a couple of minutes left if you want to get into the mix and let me know your impressions of Hollywood's big night.
Thank you. Why can't you give me the respect that I'm entitled to? Why can't you treat me the way I would be treated by any stranger on the street? Because I am not one of your fans!
Remembering some great music from the movies, Sister with Love, of course, a classic from the 60s. Sidney Poitier. And Lulu, who has transformed herself into a cabaret siren, as so many of singers, pop singers of a certain age came to do. Fabulous voice. I've been doing it for quite some time now. It's, of course, her best known single, I guess, Sister with Love. She also stars, co-stars in that movie. Another iconic Hollywood moment. Well, we had a good time with the Oscars. The award season is pretty much over until the next Country Music Awards kick in, which should be next week sometime, probably, right? And don't forget, you can get into the show because everyone has a story, and the basic premise is that we'd like to hear yours. And you don't have to be famous. You don't have to be a movie star. We want to talk to under-the-radar types, people who are authors and musicians and theater impresarios, filmmakers. Please hop over to my website. It's amybetharkawy.com, A-R-K-A-W-Y. Hit on the contact icon. Pull us in. Let me know about your project, something about yourself, and we'll connect. We have some great folks lined up. As I said, Friday, Laura Lee Eccabelli will be here to talk about her creative process and journey and the creative juggling act of doing all kinds of things, as well as, most importantly, trying to get this fascinating movie about her grandmother's life story, Chickadee, up on the screen. That's this Friday at 1. In coming weeks, we'll talk with the great author of the memoir Invisible Sisters, Jessica Handler, Jane Devon, the author of the more Elephant Girl will be here, and maybe you. We'll also check in with our folks who are taking the 30-day journal challenge. You've been working on that? I think you have. If you've been doing it, you'll let us know by going to the website or calling us. Some folks are shy, they don't want to come on the air, but either way, it works out. And if you want to call us while we're live, it's 347-857-4505 as the show winds down. I want you to have a great week, and whatever you're doing, wherever you're going, please don't forget to drive safe, play nice, and dream big, and we're going to talk next time. By the way, I want to give a shout-out to the crew from TCS Productions.
Hooray for Hollywood, that's Louie Ballyhooie Hollywood, where any office boy or young mechanic.
And Bell back at HQ. We'll talk next time on the Amy Beth Arkley Show.
Any shop girl can be a top girl if she pleases a tired businessman. Hooray for Hollywood. You may be homely in your neighborhood, but if they think you can be an actor, see Mr. Factor. He'll make your kisser look good. Within a half an hour, you look like Tyrone Power. Hooray for Hollywood. Cowboys and they hang their chaps up there. bend all their maps up and give them all that they lack. Now ain't it funny, then pay the money. Shows what you can do if your horse can act. Hooray for Hollywood. They hire fellas whose physiques are good, and then they tell them they're the perfect shaped men to act like ape men. Then they convince them they should. They make them grunt and yell, and people think it's swell.